Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, it's us again, and before we get any further at all, I realise I need to explain properly moon juice.
The phrase moon juice. Squeeze that moon, ladies and gentlemen.
I feel a little ashamed that I can't come up with something more magical.
Oh no, it's perfect.
It feels accurate to me. So the creation of what we probably ought to be naming magical moon water or, I don't know, lunar essence or something. Anyway, moon juice is that you get some water, the purest water you can find. So if you have mains tap water, your water is sadly full of chemicals. So I suggest you use rainwater. And all you need is a jar. It doesn't have to be a posh jar. It doesn't have to be a mason jar, but it can be, obviously. Any jar will do, or any clear receptacle. And you need to put your water out where the full moon can fall on it. Mm. So not in the shadow of buildings, trees, etc. But it doesn't matter if there's light pollution, and it doesn't matter if it's a cloudy night. There needs to be a kind of path of sight between where the moon will be and your jar of water. And I imagine it is
unlidded or lidded?
I always go for lidded because I don't want loads of bugs in it.
Good point, yes. That's why you said something like a kiln jar, right?
Yeah.
Glass, not plastic.
Definitely glass, not plastic. Otherwise, you'll just have plastic in your water. Mm. But what are you doing with the plastic receptacle anyway, frankly?
just thought I'd clarify.
what you can do is turn your jar upside down so that it's jarry bottom up, if you see what I mean.
So glass up.
Instead of lid up. And then you've got more showing to the moon. And obviously, if it is a clear night and there isn't light pollution, I guess your water's going to be more potentized than if it isn't. Yes. But you know, don't worry, if you live in a city and you can see the moon, and you can see that the moon, if you can see the moon, then where your eyes are, your jar can see the moon too.
Kind of thing. If there's loads of people lying on grass staring up at the moon next full moon, well, no, it's not your fault.
So if you leave this jar of water out under the moon, it becomes potentized by the moon. So the very same way that, you know, people leave crystals out under a full moon to cleanse them, it's the same sort of thing exactly. And the moonlight is one thing that has an effect on the water, and obviously we know that the moon and moonlight have an extraordinary effect on water, that the moon is responsible for our tides,
yes,
and for much of the cycles of our bleeding, potentially, in that so many women, especially if they sleep with them where the moon can fall on their face directly, end up with what we call moon cycles, in alignment with the moon, with either the full or the dark moon, which seems to depend on their life stage. So it often seems to be the case that when you are a young woman, you will bleed with a full moon, and when you are heading towards the end of your moon times, you will start to bleed with the dark moon before they end, which is interesting. That's certainly what the case was for me, and I do know a lot of other people who are getting to my sort of age and finding that they're now bleeding with the dark moon instead of the full moon, which I find fascinating.
That is fascinating. It's too late for me to test that one out.
So back to the moon juice, and as previously noted with my Capricorn go-go moon juice, is that the where the moon is in relation to the planets will have a secondary effect on how that water is. And as I pointed out on I'm almost ashamed to say it, on an Instagram and Facebook post.
Why shouldn't I?
I'm ashamed of myself that I'm relating it this way, I suppose, rather than just saying, and here's how you do it. I don't know why. I shall go into a corner later and think about that. But anyway, oh God, I've forgotten why I was telling you that I put it on Instagram and Facebook.
Well, you had what to do with it.
Yeah, the what to do with it, that was it. That it's because it's in Capricorn and Capricorns get shit done, in inverted commas, it's a great thing to do things like water vegetables with, because it helps the vegetables to go, ooh, yeah, we're going to get shit done. Which means if you're a vegetable,
and you can use a drop of it in your watering can.
Yeah, totally.
Because it will, like the flower remedies, it'll infuse everything it touches. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so I drank some, and as I said last time, have now been in this kind of whirlwind of redecorating my house, which is hilarious and something I've been meaning to do and wanting to do for ages. but anyway, yes, I would love you to explain further
the properties of each moon.
The properties of each moon.
Okay, well, the full moon is always in the astrological sign opposing the sun. So if you're in Aries, then the full moon is going to be in Libra.
Right.
Taurus, it's going to be in Scorpio. Gemini, it's going to be in Sagittarius. I've got to say, I should know all these so well. Cancer, it's going to be Capricorn, which is what we had. Leo, it's going to be Aquarius. Virgo, it's going to be Pisces. And I need to sort of tell you what each one of these is about as well, don't I suppose? Libra, it's going to be Aries. And then we come down around to Scorpio.
Scorpio being
it's going
Taurus
to be Taurus again. So, right, what does each one do? Well, an Aries moon is...
Can I stop you there, sorry, and say, can we carry on from here? So this was
yes.
the Capricorn moon.
This was a Capricorn.
We've already spoken about
an
last
Aquarian
time about
moon.
How next it'll be the Aquarian
Aquarius
moon.
Is the revolutionary, and it's about opening up that onion to say, you may have to say the same thing to more people, or you may have to say it in a slightly different way, but it's the same thing. And your revolution at the moment is talking to the farmer about, personal conversation with the farmer. We'll talk about that again when you've done it and see how things went. So the following moon, so it'll be Virgo is September time, so that full moon will be the opposite of Virgo.
No, don't we have August to get through first?
August is
Leo.
Leo. Well, the opposite of Leo is Aquarius, so that will be the next full moon.
Oh, okay. Huh. Okay, I thought there was one between them, between Cancer and Leo.
No?
No? Okay. Let me show you how much I know about it.
Well, I'm suddenly going, oh my God, is that because you can...
Well, no, it's like the same thing that I've always get to the end of summer and for some reason I imagine, I can't quite remember which month it is. It's either between September and October or between October and November.
Yeah.
My mind makes up this whole other month, which means that things that are happening in the next month are a long way off.
Yes.
And then suddenly we're in the next month and I'm like, shit! Just
I know what you mean, actually, because we've got three sets of people coming to stay in July. And this will be going
which
out.
Which is on Friday.
Well,
on Thursday. July's on Thursday. No, we're in July by the time
July
this comes
July is tomorrow
out.
From when we're recording. It'll already be well into July by the time this goes out.
Yes,
we'll have people staying with us. Right, so the first thing you need to know is that there are cardinal signs, which are initiators.
Mm-hmm.
There are mutable signs, which are adapters and flowers. And there are fixed signs, which hold things.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you have the sun in a cardinal sign, the full moon will also be in a cardinal sign. So those two talk to each other. So when you were talking about your get shit done Capricorn moon, the sun was in Cancer, which is also cardinal, so it was very good time to initiate
getting shit done.
Yeah,
it feels great.
And basically we have cardinal signs which change the seasons. They initiate a new season.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Aries initiates the start of the spring season. We have Cancer that initiates the start of the summer season. We have Libra that initiates the start of the autumn. And we have Capricorn, which initiates the start of the winter,
mm-hmm.
if you think about that. So the Leo Sun Aquarius moon is a fixed one, which is holding summer.
Mm-hmm.
holding the magnificent, this is summer.
Hold on tight, baby. We've had a lot of rain.
And in the Aquarius one, it's this is winter. But there's always the hope of the Leo moon in the Aquarian sun, which says, but the light will return. Mm-hmm. So they sort of hold themselves in opposing complementary aspects. So the Virgo is mutable. That's the allowing of the beginning of the thought of the autumn is coming. We're mixing and matching here. And so the full moon there is Pisces, and Pisces is boundless. No boundaries. Deeply spiritual, but no boundaries. So this is the time when everything is everywhere.
Yes.
So the
Pilumptious harvest time.
Yes. So the Pisces full moon would be the time of boundless love, boundless gathering, boundless everything.
Hurrah.
The kind of just wallowing.
Okay, so from the perspective of moon juice, if we just go back to moon juice, this Capricorn is get shit done juice. Next month's full moon, which will be with the energy Aquarius. Of Aquarius, which is revolutionary, but potentially goes round on itself unless you consciously are pushing the boundaries outwards.
Yes.
So therefore, in a way, that would be, if this was go-go juice, that is go-go juice of a different sort in a way, in that it's...
Where have I not achieved the revolution before? What needs to... You can still say what needs to be done, but it's what is it that I haven't done?
Or is it what is it that I keep doing but never quite...
Yes.
Never quite well enough or big enough or brave enough or whatever.
Yeah. How do I step this up a notch?
Yeah. Because isn't that interesting as well, that revolution and revolutionary mean on the one hand upheaval, but on the other hand they also mean to revolve, to go round.
Yes, exactly. A revolution goes round and round and round and round, yes. So how can we make this go round in a way that's more positive, more conscious? And the Pisces moon is, what do I need to let go of?
Which will be the September full moon.
Yes. Letting go, letting God, let it go, let the summer go, allow the summer to change, allow the falling away that allows the next cardinal to come.
Beautiful.
So then in October we have the Libra sun with the Aries full moon, which is the, this is autumn.
Samhain.
This is the magical time of warriorhood. And I always say with Aries, when I talk to people who have prominent Aries, especially women, don't go Mars, because Aries is ruled by Mars. But remember that Aries originally was the god of agriculture. He only became the god of war when we built fences.
Oh, fuck. And here we go again.
Yeah. It was basically the god of, when do we pluck, when do we sow, when do we reap, when do we prune, when do we do this? Very precise Aries. So the Aries full moon is... what do I do now to my land for the next year?
And that's October.
That's October.
That's when we always take the mulching. That's an interesting two steps, as it were, for me, just because we always pretty much spend that time of the harvest full moon and onwards, which is this time of letting go and dropping away.
Yeah.
Considering what is it that we're going to let go of and drop away before we go to Samhain, where we like jump the fire, if you like, into winter, but leaving go of those things that we don't want to take into the revolution of the new nesty dark bit, where the seeds will germinate in the darkness for what it is we want to grow. Yeah. Next spring, it's all perfect, isn't it?
It is all perfect. And of course, the next one is the sun in Scorpio, which is death. Scorpio is death and resurrection. So Scorpio is fixed because its opposite side is Taurus. So in Scorpio, when we're in November, the full moon will be in Taurus, which is infinitely practical. Taurus is, does it work? What works? So the Scorpio sun, Taurus moon is... what's broken that needs to be fixed? What isn't working? What needs to die? And that's it takes the Pisces moon, which is, what are we going to let go of, to what needs to die?
Yeah.
What needs to be buried? and what needs to be mucked.
So what needs to be composted so we can make something beautiful out of what's not needed anymore.
And that's the time where the roots go down. Scorpio is so deep. And I always say on my groups nowadays, the goal here is to go deep, not wide.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy in spirit to just go wide. You know, let's have another course to add Reiki and Kahuna, Reiki and Seishen, Reiki and Ascended Masters, Reiki. Reiki works. You don't need any of the others. Go deeper, not wider. Because if you don't go deeper, then it doesn't work. And you do need to go wider.
Yeah.
You know, so the Scorpio Sun, Taurus, full moon is go deep. Plant the, if you have prepared hyacinths or bulbs for the spring, plant them then. So, because it's all going to go down. Nothing's going to come up at that point.
I find it so fascinating. Just that. The information that I am now freshly in possession of, that as a person born in Scorpio, my full moon... No, rubbish. Rewind. Mm. As a person who has Aquarius... ascending, I believe.
Yes.
Means that what I present to the world is Scorpio soothed and dampened down a little bit from her obsessions with death and sex, which apparently is what it's all about for us Scorpio. It's not necessarily according to you, but certainly according to the Daily Mail or whatever. Anyway.
Fairly prominent.
That this explains, I mean, that is just completely encapsulates how I teach. In that I do revolutions and I'm constantly iterating exactly that, going down deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper by, let's begin again, let's talk about it again in a different way so that we can go deeper, and again in a different way so that we can go deeper.
Yes.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And it's these wonderful patterns of creation of the universe, you know, how anybody can think that nothing kick-started it.
Yeah, or that it's some random happenstance.
Yes, that it's all, nothing in the universe is random. Mm. Even miracles aren't random. They're just you step out of one reality into a quantum reality that says that's okay then.
Yeah, which, you know, oh my goodness, to go back to last time, that thing of... we could step out of one reality into another. I truly believe that if the goddess deemed it, she could just clap her hands and wham, we would all turn into hares or beagles or anything. And that therefore, rather than, you know, driving from here to there, weeping because of the state of what, you know, a farmer is doing to a piece of land somewhere, is... maybe I should be spending my time instead fiercely praying for a reality in which either that's simply not happening or a reality where what he's doing isn't devastating and destructive.
Yeah.
Because it could be so, just like that.
It can be. And the Kabbalistic interpretation and lots of other spiritual traditions is that what God is doing right now is recreating the universe every second.
Mm.
You know, this is not the seventh day yet. There's no rest for God. For God is still holding this.
Really? I mean, that just goes, that, oh, I'm appalled by that.
Okay, well, it just came out of my mouth without my thinking, so let's talk about it.
Okay. The idea that God's not having any rest would entirely explain the fact that we're so fucking useless at it and that we've got further and further and further away from allowing ourselves or the rest of the planet to rest. Surely, I mean, according to you lot, God had a jolly good rest on the seventh day. So, therefore, on some level, because time is an illusion and merely a simple story for us who can't get our head around it. Yeah. So surely she is resting on the seventh day all of the time, whilst also flickering creation in and out of existence.
This is true, but for God, time is not the way we'd see it, 7 days.
No.
And I get what you're saying, but I don't quite hold it like that, because if you look at it, it's so clear in Genesis, and God saw that it was good. And God saw that it was very good. That's the rest. It's, oh, yes. I like that. That's really good. Now what?
So surely she does that every moment. Yeah,
she does that as well.
In and out of existence.
Yeah.
So she is resting. So the seventh day has come and we can all rest. Thank you, Maggie.
But it's both. It's yes and. You see, this is what I love about when you discuss anything like that. It's yes, you're right, and I don't need to be right, but yes, it's right too. Creation is still unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
The universe is still expanding. Nothing has stopped. So maybe rest was the wrong word. God doesn't stop, but God can also rest.
Yes, and yes, and that is one of the biggest obstructions in my past iterations of myself between me and rest, actually, is the idea that you have to get all the shit done before you rest.
Yes.
And that
wonderful.
So doesn't work.
Yes.
Because, of course, we never do. The to-do list is endless.
Yes, there's always more to do. You never get it done.
Exactly, which is why I go back to how much I loved, and I think it's worth asking you to repeat, please, the old tithing system. Tell me again how it works.
Sure, I've got to get the rest of the astrology in, but we could do the rest of the astrology next week, couldn't we?
We certainly could, yes.
Lovely. The tithing system is very clear. It's in the books of the law, and it's spread out because you have to look for these things. So often people say, you know, it's not clear in the Bible. No, because it's a really embarrassing phrase, don't cast pearls before swine. Mm. If you want it, you've got to look for it. That's a whole hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
The answers are always there, but they're not going to be given to you at the age of zero. Well, you've got them at the age of zero. You lose them over the years, don't you? Because if it's just given to you on a plate, you won't value it.
Mm.
So you have to look. So the tithing system is clear. Everybody, money is excluded from tithing. Tell every church on the planet that. If you only have money, you do not tithe. It's your increase in what you have grown. Increase in your produce, and you give the first 10 to your link with spirit, to create relationship with the divine. In those days, yes, it was given to the Levites because they were the ones who maintained the temple for you. This was the second temple. You would give it to God.
Mm-hmm.
You would give it in the offering of a libation, or you bake a loaf of bread to take to the temple to be blessed and then distributed, or you'd make wine to take to the temple to be blessed and distributed. That would be your tithe.
Am I asking for the wrong thing? I'm talking about the thing where everybody rests.
Oh, well, that's the fourth tithe. Sorry,
Okay,
first tithe is you give the first... 10% just means one whole thing in the Bible.
Okay.
Because 10 fingers.
Right.
Know, one whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had 10 more lambs, you would give one lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second 10% was for celebration, fun, partying for you. And yours, mm-hmm. to have great times.
Mm-hmm.
Third tithe was charity, which was to give to others. But that was only given every third year because they had gleaning. They left the edges of the land for everybody was poor to eat. So nobody starved.
Mm.
Nobody needed to starve. The fourth tithe was the Jubilee, which was the resting of the land. And the resting of the resting of the people was the every seventh day, and the resting of the land was every seventh year.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were saying off air, that's what we don't do. That's when we need to fertilize the land with this rubbish, because we don't allow it to regenerate itself.
Yeah.
But if we can just live that way a little bit, which is connection, celebration, everybody else. And I teach it as in everything else. Connect. Take care of you, go out and deal with the world. And somebody actually on the weekly Kabbalah group that I lead said, and she was quite, I'm always quoting Anne Lamott, lighthouses do not run around islands looking for ships to save. And she said, but hang on, a lighthouse is there to keep people away from it. It's there as a warning, so it's trying to repel people. And I thought, oh, drat. It's yes and, isn't it? Which is right.
Everything's yes and.
So I've got to work out an answer for that next week. And I just think it's ineffable, basically. It's still a lovely analogy, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
So why did you want me to remind people about the time? Well, it's the order in which we do things. And this rest... Oh, yes, back to Genesis. What I love about Genesis story, so much about it that's beautiful, even though it's been edited out of some of the beauty, is that the Elohim, the goddess, the mother nature, sees that everything is good except the first two things she has to do. She has to separate the light from the dark. She does not say that's good. Mm. And she has to separate the land from the water. And she doesn't say that's good either. Everything else that is brought in is good or very good. But the actual separating, the first breaking in order to create is not good. And I just think that's fascinating.
It is fascinating. And for some perhaps unknowable reason, it made me really want to cry when you said that. Just, I guess, because our separation seems so extreme at the moment.
Mm.
Our separation from our knowing of our indivisibility to the rest, from the rest of life and from our planet.
But can't you see there's a little clue there? The separation was necessary but not good.
Mm.
And we've gone through this year of separation from each other, separation from all our ordinary living things. And that separation was important so we could learn from it. I don't think we have. But that's what COVID was about.
Yeah.
Was to say, you need a period of separation. And I've been saying, started up comedy again. Oh, God, you know, this is basically, as we've said before, Mother Nature saying, go to your room and think about what you've done.
Mm. Yeah. I have to say that before you made me feel really sad, I was sitting over here trying so hard not to snort with laughter just because I'm sitting in a room with someone who went, no, back to Genesis. And I didn't want to leave. Who could ever have predicted that? Oh, I just thought it was so funny. Oh, dearie me. Oh, it makes me laugh so much.
But everything that's good has a mystical aspect in it,
mm-hmm.
I think. You know, he's got his...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, everything, frankly, full stop, has a mystical aspect to it.
Yeah.
But yes, the fact that I could have not just the greatest amount of love, but also the greatest amount of respect for you and your back to Genesis, just... In some ways, it just blows my mind. But, you know, the information that the teachings of this man, Jesus, and of these books that we call the Bible, the fact that they don't mean what we've been led to believe that they mean, and they don't come from where we think they come from.
Mm.
It's such important information. You and I are so consistently on the same page.
Yes.
Who could have predicted that? You know,
and even when you say, no, I disagree, we can go and talk to it and we go, okay, well, it's a yes and, or no, that was clumsy language, or yes, I see what you mean, or oh, yeah, I'm wrong. There's been so many times when talking with you, I can go, okay, I'm wrong. I'm glad to know that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not even about being wrong or right, is it? And most of the times I go, whoa, Maggie, and not because you're a Christian. They're because you're using quite unpolitically correct language, frankly, rather than, you know, that there's anything wrong with what you're thinking. It's more usually the way it's being expressed.
Yes.
And it was pointed out to me today that I get to be such a smart ass in that regard because I hang out with a lot of young people, because I have sons who are about to be 24, about to be 26 and 28. And I would be likely saying the very same things that you do. We are of a similar-ish age, were it not for the fact that I've got, you know, young people telling me,
that's good, not correct.
God, woman, what did you just say? Type of things. And, you know, have had for years. But that wasn't where I was going with that. Anyway. La-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da. Oh, yeah. Just that if I can sit here and agree and talk and listen and be amazed by the beauty of the teachings that are what's written in the book.
Yes.
Then almost anyone can, surely, because I'm not just a witch, if you see what I mean. I was a witch who was really quite vehemently anti-Christian in a very quiet and polite way. Mm. I didn't think there was anything wrong with Christians as people,
but the system, but I thought there was a very great
deal wrong with the system.
Yeah.
And that just, it does, enduringly give me so much hope for this day when the goddess just goes, oh, right, okay, let's just, we'll be done with those kinds of division today. You know, I'm going to turn them all not into hares, but into open-hearted, free-thinking people, all of them.
Yeah. She's also got the power to say, enough, humanity, you're out of here.
Yeah. Well, which is what we're on her behalf, as part of her and as iterations of her body. That's what we're busy doing, yeah.
It is what we're busy doing. We are on an extinction course.
Yeah.
And we're heading for it quite joyfully, by the way.
It would seem, yeah.
I also want to say one other thing about the Bible. People always say how nasty it is and how misogynist it is, and it is.
Yeah, it can be really bad.
No doubt about that. But, you know, I actually have a respect for a people that will allow, as a sacred text, the fact that they screwed up so monumentally, so often, and so long.
Explain?
Well, the most people nowadays, especially if you're some kind of spiritual teacher or guru, you're supposed to be holy and good and wise.
Oh dear.
And the Jews just screwed up right, left and centre, just like all the rest of us are doing now. But this holy book is showing God getting so exasperated with them.
Oh, okay. Does it? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, all the prophets. Nobody reads the prophets because they're not the Torah, so they're not the great thing. But the prophets are all about, you don't want to do that. No, don't do that. And I'm sure I told this story before, but it bears telling again in Jeremiah. There's this bit where, no, it's in Samuel, sorry. Samuel, the prophet, is going to die, and his sons aren't interested in taking on the role of the prophet. So the people come along and say, could you ask God for a king, please? Or the Lord, not God, it's Yahweh at that point. And Samuel goes, okay, and goes and says to the Lord, they want a king. And the Lord says, tell them they don't. They really don't want a king. A king is not going to be a good idea. And so Samuel goes back and says, God says, you don't want a king. And they go, yeah, we do. Everybody else has got a king. We want a king. So Samuel goes back and says, they want a king. And God says, tell them they don't want a king. A king will put their daughters into slavery and their sons to the plough and take them into war. Once you've got a king, you've got war. And Samuel goes back and says, God says you don't want a king because it'll lead you. No, everybody else has want a king. We want a king. So Samuel goes back to God and says, they want a king. God says, fine, give them a king. They won't listen. They've got to learn.
So they got a king.
They've got Saul.
Put their daughters into...
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. I have no idea who Saul is.
Oh, God, yes. And all the battles and the slaughterings of the Philistines and the cutting off of the Philistines' foreskins and all that.
Oh, my Lord.
And God is going around going, yeah, well. And when we get to Jeremiah, we've got God going, for God's sake, Israel. I mean, for my sake, Israel. You know, I divorce you. Get lost. You know, I'm fed up to the bad TV. You won't listen. You just go your own stupid way. And they all go, oh, shit. And then the Elohim comes along and says, you know something? I'm going to love you through it. I know I had a tantrum with you, but I'm going to love you through it because I just love you. And you're idiots. But the only way through this is love. So I don't divorce you. Let's keep going. You know, we don't get that message. All we get is the eternal damnation for all those who...
Don't listen to
this, that, and the other. But no, there is no eternal damnation in the Bible anywhere. Anywhere. It's just mistranslation. There's certainly purgatory issues, which we get in this life anyway. You get them whether you're living or dead, which is, this has to end. You know, this has to change. We have to take another look at this. Would you please wake up and have a look? That's what purgatory is. It's the, oh, shit, I've been such a prune. My God, what have I done? Ah, that's purgatory.
Right.
And then heaven is, I'll do something better. So you get it, you get them at all levels, whether you're living or dead. But it's not forever. Nothing can be forever.
That's the thing I wanted to ask you. I read somewhere, and I can't remember where, that in the original teachings of the man called Jesus is the idea that heaven is a place attainable on earth. The kingdom of heaven is within you. Okay.
Seek you first the kingdom of God, and the kingdom of heaven is within you. The kingdom of heaven is to make peace with what you are and have right now. The kingdom of God is to seek for better.
Yum. And so the idea that you can only have heaven when you're dead
is ludicrous.
Ludicrous. Marvellous.
Utterly, utterly ludicrous. It's jam tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's unless you do what I tell you to do, you're going to hell.
Which was invented when? 4th century or 6th
century? Came along at 4th century, exacerbated in 12th, 13th century. But it's always been the control thing, which unless you do what I say, I'm going to make sure you're punished.
Mm.
You know, it's just a human construct.
I'm jumping around randomly, I'm sorry, but tell me why in the tithing system you don't give money if money's all you've got.
Most people didn't have money.
Oh, I see. Okay. So presumably now you would give money if money was all you had.
Yeah, nowadays you give money, yes. Right. Because it's a form of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's today's version of a sheep and a couple of flagons of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what profit you made.
Yeah.
You know, a percentage of your profit, one whole thing from your profit. And when I was seriously broke, my one thing would usually be a 5p piece. Because it was a piece of silver, you know. So it was one whole thing. So I'd put that on one side and then give when it had accumulated enough. Or alternatively, I'd just throw the silver in a river as a tithe. Because the naiads, isn't it, in the water, they like silver.
Apparently. They do. They love sparkly, shiny silver things. Yeah,
which is the start of throwing money in wishing wells. But, of course, now we throw copper.
Why do we throw copper?
I don't know. People throw a penny in the count fountain, don't they, rather?
There's no such thing as a penny anymore. Is there? One piece. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. Sorry. Oh, my God. Is that long since I've seen any cash? That's hilarious. Literally, when you said a penny, the thing that appeared in my mind was a big old penny rather than a funny little 1p.
Yeah.
And it's clearly a very long time since I've seen a funny little 1p. How hilarious.
I'll show you my purse. We're on 36 minutes. We probably better stop.
We should shut up. Lovely to see you.
Thank you. Lovely to see you too. Thank you for listening.